This week on The Gist of It, for some unknown reason, one of us doesn't think Cowboys and Aliens is a good idea for a movie.
Yeah, I guess I can tell you who it is.
We have an NFL agreement, so that means we've got peace. Now let's have war! Amy Winehouse, shocked? Is that the appropriate word to use to describe the reaction to her unfortunate passing? Canada, World Cop or World Guidance Counselor, we'll discuss. The Winnipeg Jets' new logo. One of us thinks it's terrific, the other would like it to go the way of the Avro Arrow. And the U.S. debt ceiling. It's like Boehner and Obama are a married couple arguing over whether to sink their money into a GIC or buy one of those fancy new 3D TVs. Come on, do both.
Politics, sports, entertainment, pop culture. It's all fair game here. Somewhere in the city of Toronto, two brains are about to collide. What will remain is the gist of it. Here now are Don Landry and Bill Hayes.
Don, another week that was, and I got to tell you, every time we get together to do these things, it tends to make you focus on what's been going on all week, and this week was a doozy. There was a whole lot. There was the Norway situation, which is tragic on so many different levels. Amy Winehouse, and you know, you mentioned before, a few minutes ago, how Twitter went crazy and how surprised and shocked people were.
See, and I wondered about what it was that would make people shocked about Amy Winehouse's demise. I don't want to seem cold and callous about this. I'm sorry she's gone. It's tragic.
Mm-hmm.
But shocked is not an adjective I would have used. In fact, I didn't use. When I heard the news, I went, oh, that's too bad. I figured that was coming at some point. I would have been shocked if she'd lived until she was 90.
Here's the thing.
60, 40.
There are people who you think are going to go at any time. And you have, like, for the last 40 years. As an example, I can think of two off the top of my head that I am stunned they are still with us. One is Keith Richards.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Like, hello.
And that
the other
is amazing.
Joe Cocker.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, early, mid-70s, it was like, whoa, Joe's not going to be with us long. And he's still going. And actually, still going pretty strong.
Pete Townsend's another one of the Who. I mean, who lived not as prodigious with, you know, the hard living as, say, Keith Richards. Keith Richards is on
the
top
boy.
Of the pedestal.
Sure.
He is someone who will never die. Never mind about him getting to the point where you're surprised that he's still. He's just, he will outlive us. He will outlive us, Bill. I mean, if you get to be 95 and I get to be 95. Keith Richards is still going to be going. I am positive that there's some kind of a deal with some kind of an underworld being. Not that I'm
really
a religious man necessarily, but maybe Keith did have plenty of sympathy for the devil back in the day and more, and has the deal that is fabled. What? I mean, what
like
else
Robert Johnson was supposed to have had.
Robert Johnson. Yeah, well, Robert Johnson got screwed, though, didn't he? I mean, he didn't get to live a long time. He got greatness. What, 60 years after he died or something like that?
Oh, now you want to have greatness while you're alive.
Well, yes. It's we were talking about Marshall McLuhan last week. And it's just so, I think it's so unfair that so many of the great people in the history of civilization are great well after they've died. It's not fair that Marshall McLuhan had to go through the 10 or 12 years of people saying, boy, this guy's lost it. He's an idiot. Nothing of what he said makes any sense. And now, genius, right? You think of the great giant thinkers of every age. Most of them, if not all of them, were bold enough to go and swim against the current of the day. And so they were just thought of as either, you know,
visionaries, but
well, maybe
side.
By very few people were they vision. Mostly they were just insane or heathens. And then long after they died, then they became great. It's not fair. It's not fair.
I'll tell you, with all due respect, it's something you and I are never going to have to worry about.
Kablooey! It's time for Bombs Away.
Well, the NFL lockout is officially over. That's good news for football fans. Now, for my money, football is absolutely the best TV game ever. When you consider the experience of being at a pro football game, either here or in the United States, there are some differences. In the States, of course, the game is only part of the experience, and that is somewhat the case in the Western CFL, but not so much down east. But the real difference, to me, is watching the game on TV or being there. The way television has evolved from black and white to color to high def and now 3D, It's going to cause a big problem, and soon. Attendance will wane simply because people won't be bothered to go to a game, especially in severe weather conditions. I mean, why would you? If the powers that be want attendance to stay constant, the at-the-game experience is going to have to improve immensely. It's a problem all big sports will have to deal with, but for football, it's really crucial.
Just goes to show you, if there's enough money involved, Bill, you can get a deal without locking players out during actual scheduled action or have a strike.
Are you listening, NBA?
But you need NFL money to get that done. The NBA, the NHL. Baseball's been reasonably peaceful for many years
18,
now.
18, 19 years.
Give them
like that,
credit for that. But it was in nobody's interest to lose games in the National Football League. And they came to their senses. I thought it was kind of funny when word of this agreement first leaked out last week that it was probably going to happen. Somebody on ESPN in the States said, our long football nightmare appears to be over. And I'm thinking, what football nightmare? Is that the football nightmare where you saw the Super Bowl and then didn't miss a minute of action the next season? That's your... You're really so into the transaction wire that this was a nightmare for you. Look, I'm happy as hell. I love football. To me, what I would like to see is another football league crop up between the end of the Super Bowl and the beginning of the CFL season. Call me happy camper if that happens.
See that. Yeah.
All year long football, I would really dig that. So good on the NFL. 10-year deal, apparently, with some reopeners. So it doesn't mean labor peace necessarily for the full decade. And I understand, and I hope they do it, that they may down the road take a look at the expanding of the regular season schedule. I think it's a good thing to do. Or at the very least, in my opinion, enough with the preseason. Some teams are playing, what, five preseason games?
And nobody cares.
Nobody cares. And they're unnecessary, too. You don't need them. What the NFL needs to do, I think, if they insist on having that much preparation in games, well, then they need to have one or two of these games just at somebody's training site, and you're not charging people and trying to pack your 80,000 seat stadium.
Well, they do that as well, though.
Well, you're
just
right.
Not often
well, just
enough.
Have those. And look, Peyton Manning doesn't need to play more than a half of preseason football. Maybe three quarters over the course of 2 weeks.
No, see, there's the problem. You're wrong. He does have to play. Because if he's not playing, I ain't paying.
Well, and that's a good point. That's an excellent point. People aren't going to want to. No, it's not a good point now that I think about it. Because people are paying to see games where Peyton Manning might play one series or zero series if it's early on.
Yeah,
right?
But here's the thing. You understand that going in. You get that. But you're not interested if he's not playing at all. I mean, I admit it's a small thing, but are you actually going to try and tell somebody, you know, I'm going to watch some guy in a uniform? You want to see Peyton Manning, even if it's for one series.
You know, preseason everything stinks.
True.
To me.
Yeah.
I just want real angry action. And you don't get that in any sport in preseason. As you get closer to the regular season, you get more serious commitment to what's going on in the game from the players and that. But it's never really interested in me.
Well, let me ask you.
Or it's never really interested me.
This year might be different. And the reason I say that is in past seasons, in every other season when there isn't a lockout, teams get together throughout the summer. We don't get to see this an awful lot, but they go over their playbook, they go over plays, they get a chance to familiarize themselves with whatever systems they're going to be using. They haven't had that this year. So maybe it might be a little more interesting this year because, A, the guys who are actually going to play will play longer because they have to play under these new systems. You buy into that?
Maybe. I don't know. The proof will be in the pudding. We'll see. I think a lot of that can be overplayed, can be overrated, to tell you the truth. There are some exceptionally difficult playbooks to learn, some intricacies, but maybe there don't need to be. And maybe that can be trotted out as the regular season goes on anyway. Just put your chin strap on, hit guys, throw passes, run out of the backfield, try to get to the big rectangle at the other end. That's it.
I think Andy Fantuz picked a bad year to go down there because for that very reason.
Yeah.
He won't be getting the full shot he would have gotten before simply because they'll be much more interested in seeing people they know are going to be there. That's going to hurt him.
Andy Fantuz will make the Chicago Bears if he runs crisp, dedicated patterns quickly and is sure-handed. That's it. I mean, that's the end of it. If he doesn't get the intricacies of the playbook fully, if he shows that guy can beat cornerbacks or halfbacks, depending on where they're putting them, if he can beat them, run the proper route consistently and precisely, and catch the ball, he'll make the team.
He's got to get that chance, though, and I'm not sure this is the year that he'll get it.
There's a movie coming out in the next little while called The Change Up. And it stars a couple of people who I think are very funny. Jason Bateman, I love Bateman. That guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Arrested Development.
Great
and,
show.
And on and on. He's beautiful. Deadpan, perfect delivery. I often thought it was difficult in Arrested Development to be the straight guy and still be funny. And he did it.
Yeah, but he was. You're right.
He did it. Ryan Reynolds is in it. And he's a funny guy, too. I've seen him in a few movies. But the movie's called The Change Up. Can you guess what it might be about? You might guess pitching. Maybe it's a baseball movie.
I'm going to guess it's about an hour and a half.
Yeah. Well, which probably is going to be maybe 90 minutes too long. Can these guys pull it off? I guess maybe. But it's a worn-out premise. It's two guys who envy each other's lives. Something weird happens and they change bodies. Are you kidding me? Hollywood, knock it off. We don't need... there have been... just a legion of these films.
They are bankrupt
Freaky Friday,
of ideas.
Big, and on it goes, and on and on. We don't need this. Don't do it. But yin yang, Bill. Can you imagine a movie where cowboys are fighting aliens? This one has me excited, Bill. Cowboys and Aliens is coming out this Friday. I might camp out on the sidewalk to get into the theater first to see this film. This is an original idea. This is such a good idea. Once in a while, somebody has an idea. You go, I wish I'd thought of that.
Yeah,
well, I wish I'd thought of cowboys and aliens.
Here's the thing. If you actually go and camp out on the sidewalk to go and see that, I will put you firmly, strongly, irrevocably into the aliens camp.
This is as a guy, obviously, folks, who has not seen the trailer. Obviously, you haven't seen the trailer. You haven't read about this.
I did see the trailer.
You've seen the trailer, and you don't think this would be the most... This doesn't bring out your inner 12-year-old?
No.
Screaming, awesome, I've got to be a part of this?
No.
How old are you, Bill? Can you not channel the inner 12-year-old anymore? Is he just too far away?
It'd be kind of cool if you did that with, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, or whatever the hell that was, Hidden Dragon, Crouching Tiger. That would have been cool. Kind of seeing, 13th century Japan with aliens. I'd go, different.
Maybe that's next. That's different, but cowboys fighting aliens is not... you've seen this before.
No, I have not seen
this
before.
The whole idea
is just like, what?
Yes, that's the point of it. That's what makes it so original. It hasn't been done before. It's just flight of fancy. It's just fiction romp entertainment kind of thing. It's got Harrison Ford. Everybody loves Harrison Ford. It's got Daniel Craig, that's for the ladies. Olivia Wilde, that's for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Sam Rockwell, who everybody loves. And you've got cowboys having to deal with aliens in 1840 something, I think. And they have some weaponry that you wouldn't have had back then. And that's fine. The cowboy mentality versus the futuristic mentality.
Let me
ask
you this.
Beautiful thing.
Can you imagine the pitch to Daniel Craig? And his agent. Daniel, I've got an idea. Now listen,
why is everybody you do Australian, by the way?
It's easy. That's as far as it'll go. Daniel, I've got an idea. Look, you can't do another Bond right now. You got to get something completely outside the box. How about a cowboy movie? And at that point, I'm sure Daniel Craig's going, yeah, that'll work. And aliens. At which point you're like, what? What? Excuse me?
I mean... No. He probably said,
I don't get it.
He said, another cowboy movie? Nah, I don't see it. What? Aliens? Yes. That is probably how it happened.
And then he said,
Olivia Wilde's going to be in it. She's going to play your love interest. And then he said, fine, I'm cool with
that. I'll buy into it. He probably did do that. But it's not a movie I have a whole lot of interest in. It screams computer generated graphics, which is fine. I'm not interested. And. I'll leave it at that.
Fine, good. I'm going into Theater 1, Cowboys and Aliens. I'll say, hi, Bill. I'll wave to you as you go into Theater 2, Tree of Life. Which I also want to see.
Yeah, okay.
This is The Gist of It with Landry and Hayes.
Don, it's a weekend of actually a month of weddings. I mean, I went to one this past weekend. I'm going to one this coming weekend. And there's another one in about three weeks after that that unfortunately I won't be able to go to. But I find that those things do tend to happen in threes. This past one was in Petawawa. And I've never been to Petawawa. Like everybody else in Canada, I think I've heard about it. It's a, you know, a Canadian Forces base. And it was really interesting to see the place. Got a chance to talk to some of our veterans, guys who are still actually in the Army, who've been to Afghanistan. And I'll tell you, it was a real eye-opening experience talking to them. Firstly, I have nothing but admiration for anybody who's been there. It's a tremendous undertaking. It takes an awful lot of guts. I can't imagine sleeping in a tent with one eye open all the time in a place so far from home, so alien to the way we live. So nothing but admiration for these guys. I do have some questions about why we're there.
Well, don't worry about it. We're leaving.
Well, there is that. But, you know, the thing with it is that I think we sometimes lose sight of that. Apparently, if you're against us being in Afghanistan, you're against the soldiers. And nothing could be further from the truth. I am all for these guys. I can't tell you how grateful I am that they're there for us. I just kind of think we've lost something in this country, and that is, on a world stage, we used to be looked at as peacekeepers. We used to be looked at as guys who were there to clean up afterwards and make sure that, you know, we were kind of neutral, kind of like the Switzerland of North America. I wish we still had that. You?
Yeah, I think we can reclaim it, and I think we may, and I hope it's not too late. But I think it's obvious that we may have made enemies that we didn't have previously, or if they were our enemies, they didn't seem to be mobilized and motivated particularly against Canada. But I understand why the Canadian forces went to Afghanistan on a number of different levels. But one that I think politically was most important, we may not be there if we had gone to Iraq, I do believe. But you recall the terrible pressure that the United States was putting on Canada to be part of the coalition of the willing in Iraq, and we stayed away from it, at least publicly. Been some talk about, you know, maybe some covert operations by some Canadian forces during that war. But that didn't go very well when it came to Canadian and American relations. And I think that pressure, in part at least, led to a decision to be in Afghanistan.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, but I think what's lost in this a lot of times is it's believed by some, I've spoken to many Canadians who believe this, that it was a time for Canada to, quote, man up. It was our turn. It can't just be the States taking care of us. My argument to that was Canada was playing a very important role, a role that someone has to play. And I think that got forgotten. I really think it's important that after whatever the skirmish is, anywhere in the world, someone comes along to make sure, hey, everybody calm down. And that's what we used to be.
Yeah. I think we can be that in certain situations, and will be that again in certain situations. Don't you?
I hope so.
It doesn't. They're not mutually exclusive. They're not. I mean, well, it's situational. And there may very well be another situation later today or tomorrow where we decide to send forces in who will be peacekeepers rather than warriors.
Yeah, but I think you're either peacekeepers or you're not. You're either neutral or you're not.
Just generally speaking, no. I think you, like anything else in this world, and we've talked about this before, I think that's a dangerous position to be in. I'm just always this, or I'm just always that. You have to look at every single situation that comes to you in life, be thoughtful about it, and judge it, and then take appropriate, what you believe to be appropriate action, I think.
I see what you're saying, and certainly that was the case in World War I and World War II, and I understand that, and I get it. But I think, generally speaking, unless you're talking about something on a world stage like that, there's still an important role for Canada, and it's not being on the front line. It's to be the guy coming up afterwards and saying, hey, you know what? Everybody calm down.
I don't think our innocence has been lost. It just may have been misplaced.
It's Phil Hayes and Don Landry, and you're getting the gist of it.
Don, I mentioned that I was up in Petawawa on the weekend for a wedding. Great time. Came back through Barry's Bay and saw a wonderful park dedicated.
Was that okay with Barry? Did you get permission from him first, or did
Didn't
you just
see a bay? I was very surprised at this, actually.
No Barry, no bay.
Strange. No, but I did see a park, a little parkette, actually, dedicated to the memory of one Janusz Zurakowski. You know who he was?
Yeah, he was a, I can't think of the words right
test
now.
Pilot.
He was a test pilot. Thank you very much.
And who was the guy who was the Avro Arrow?
He flew the Arrow, yeah.
That's right. And I bring that up simply because it wasn't the only reminder I had this week of the Avro Arrow.
Oh.
The Winnipeg Jets logo, which to me, I looked at it and I went, my God, they brought it back. What did you think?
No, it doesn't look like the Avro Arrow.
I thought, well, no, but I think it reminded me of it. It looked kind of like, that's all I'm saying.
Doesn't look like the Avro Arrow. Well, unlike the Avro Arrow, the Jets logo will live because Diefenbaker's not around to kill it. And for that, I am thankful.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. I love the logo. I love all the written part. I mean, they unveiled three, really. There's a main logo,
right,
which I think everyone has seen by now. It's a jet pointed up over top of a maple leaf.
The arrow, that's the one.
Kind of completing the maple leaf.
You want to salute every time you see
the
it.
The secondary one is gorgeous. I mean, it's two hockey sticks. It's very military looking. I really like it. The colors seem to be good. I am all over that, baby. I want a Jets sweater already.
Really?
I'm not even a Jets fan. Per se, but I want one of those sweaters.
Did you like the Islanders one with the fishermen?
No, it could have been done better. I didn't mind that they changed it. I thought they could have done a better job with it. But I mean, the Jets logo is tremendously good. It's very proud looking. It's well designed, I think. It's going to be a hit.
Hogwash. What it is not the old one. So everybody who's a Winnipeg Jet fan has to get rid of the old and bring in the new. Maybe I'm a bit of a cynic on this, but I think there perhaps was some kind of a monetary thought to this whole new logo.
No, not perhaps.
Oh, you're
exactly right. But
thank
so
you.
What? Who doesn't do that? And guess what? A year or two down the road,
there'll be
they'll trot
one.
Out the throwback.
Sure they will.
Remember the old Jets one? Do you want one of those jerseys? I mean, they do it all the time. The Leafs, I think, are going to put out a new retro jersey for this upcoming season. And that's what you do. You merchandise. You sell things. So a lot of people already had Jets sweaters, jerseys, whatever.
But they're not right now.
Well, right, exactly. So how do we make a little money here, and how do we rebrand a team that some people didn't even want named the Jets because it didn't have a terrific history of winning?
Well, it also wasn't the same franchise.
Right. I mean, but how do we do that? How do we rebrand it? Well, we don't like the name Jets. Half of the people out there in Winnipeg, come on, they're a bunch of losers. If we're going to call them the Jets because a lot of people did like that, how do we differentiate between the two? And so you come up with a new look. I think it's brilliant, bold, beautiful. Love it.
I kind of disagree. I think it's Winnipeg.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean it's Winnipeg?
Brilliant, bold,
you know
beautiful.
What?
It's Winnipeg.
One of the most ridiculous arguments I'd heard against this logo in the last week was from somebody who said, how does that suggest hockey to anybody? How is that a hockey logo?
What?
That isn't hockey. It's
there
a jet on a leaf. And to which I replied, what does a maple leaf mean when it comes to hockey? What does a wheel with a red wing on it? How does that suggest hockey?
Spoke to
how does
come
a
on,
C and an H suggest hockey? The logo and the entity get married. The logo will mean hockey as time goes on because people will be attached to the team, which is attached to the logo. So it's a ridiculous. Don't even entertain that argument from anybody. What does it say about hockey? It's not a hockey logo. The Senator. What's hockey about that?
But all kidding aside, I like having the Jets back. I really do. I'm just not a big fan of the logo.
Boehner v. Obama. Basically, what it boils down to when it comes to the U.S. debt limit crisis. It's a crisis.
It is a crisis.
It will be more of a crisis next week. Boehner versus Obama. It's almost a laughable situation. If it weren't so serious, maybe it is a laughable situation. Because as we sit here today recording this podcast, I think there's no way an H-E-double hockey sticks this is allowed to become any kind of a default on any kind of national
they can't loan allow that to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The debt ceiling is probably going to be moved. And I think you've got a lot, an awful lot of hollow rhetoric coming, particularly from the Republican side. They seem to want to turn this into give us something so we can allow you to not bankrupt the country. Well, you'll be the guys who are seen as bankrupting the country if this happens, because you're not budging at all. And there may be as many as 50% of the people in the United States who'll buy the medicine you're trying to shove down their throat, but it'll still be on you.
Well, most of the people, as I understand it anyways, who voted for Tea Party Republicans, and they really are the ones who, you know, dug their feet in, are of the opinion right now that, look, yeah, you want to cut spending, you got to do that, but maybe a little bit of tax hike here and there isn't that bad an idea. The guy who's really the one to watch here is a guy named Grover Norquist. Now, I cannot remember the name of his political action committee, but he's the guy who has had all of these Republicans sign a pledge that they will not allow taxes to rise.
Well, six or seven didn't sign it, right?
Not many, though.
I think it was six or seven.
And
those are what the Republicans I would call maybe moderate and maybe people I would listen to.
And isn't
from
that
time
sad?
To time.
There's only six or seven of them. But the reality here is that, you know, they're playing politics with something that could very easily set the world into another recession.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get the ideology. I get the fact that, you know, you have a strong belief in something, but you also have to believe that you represent not just those people, you represent all of us. And that means sometimes you got to take a bitter pill. In this case, they've got to come to some kind of conclusion here that will not put us back into that wagon.
And I think they will. That's why I remain kind of unfazed and have really pushed a lot of this into the background. It's just kind of background noise for me, because when push really comes to shove, I think they have no choice but to raise their debt ceiling, which brings me to another point, which is stop calling it a debt ceiling. You know, if you and I levitate right now to this ceiling above us, we'll hit our head and that's all. We can't arbitrarily say, you know what, I think we're going to make this ceiling another foot higher. It's too abstract, isn't it? You could call it the debt rubber band if you wanted. Oh, it gets to a certain point, it snaps. Well, all they would do is say, you know what? We've just made the rubber band stretchier. And that's all they keep doing. At some point, they do have to come up with some kind of a solution to call our runaway debt. Don't you think, even like macroeconomically speaking, because microeconomically, you, me, our family budgets, we have to at some point tackle that. And we don't have the luxury of, well, some, I guess we do in some ways, of magically moving our debt ceiling, but it just leads to more trouble.
It does. Well, one of the other interesting things about this is that whole no taxes situation with people making over $250,000. The Bush tax cuts, they want to continue, and eventually they're going to have to be repealed. Eventually it's going to have to go back to what the tax levels were before. And there's nothing wrong with that, because there's one fundamental lie that's at the bottom of all of this, and that is the belief that all of those people are job makers. They're the ones who are giving you jobs. They're making jobs. Well, you know what? They've had those tax breaks for quite a while, and I don't see them making any jobs at all.
Yeah.
So, no, enough.
What was it? I can't remember who it was who said the trickle-down is actually... Trickle-down theory, the trickle is piss, basically, is what it is.
Yeah.
I'd like to credit whoever it was who said that. I can't honestly remember who it was. Let me finish the segment by asking you a question.
Sure.
I think it was 2007. The Canadian dollar actually got to almost $1.10 American.
Something like that.
Maybe there
was
that superheated week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going, I said at the time, I'll go out and buy American dollars, lots of them, when it's $1.10, because I'm going to make some dough. Well, as we record this, I think it's nearing $1.07. Is there any kind of a level where you would think, I'm going to take a big chunk of my Canadian dollar dollars in my bank and buy American, because down the road, I expect this to go back to a 60-cent Canadian dollar, or even an 80-cent or 90-cent Canadian dollar.
Well, I do, but I can't hold on to the dollars for that long.
Yeah.
That's a part of the problem. I find it one of the things that happens, at least my belief on one of the things that happens, is these markets react so quickly to everything. And as you say, if it's at $1.07, that doesn't mean that if they magically come to some agreement on this debt ceiling by tomorrow, that it'll slide back down to $1 that quickly.
I mean,
you know, because it's speculative. There's so many things at work here. But I'd also be the last to tell you that I have any idea of what's going to happen in the future. So I'd be really hesitant to do that.
And I think we know more in the 4 years that have gapped between what I was talking about then and now. And in 2007, a little more naivety, a little less information in my brain about what the Americans are doing economically. Mm-hmm. I might have hopped on it, felt bad that I didn't. Now I'm with you. Even if it gets to $1.10, $1.12. $1.15, I might go, I don't know if I can wait around long enough to see a profit on this if I buy American dollars.
Well, they have some real problems there. They have to figure out how Washington works. And I think we saw this in the last election, right? A lot of people were saying it was really a referendum on Washington. And what ended up is you had this tremendously polarized view. You had the extreme right, or close to the extreme right in a lot of cases. Certainly that's what the Tea Party would be defined as. And then you had the left, which, you know, probably wouldn't have been left, would have been center, say, 15, 20 years ago. Yeah. But There's no middle ground anymore. There's no one in the middle anymore. And until they figure that out, until they realize, you know what, part of governance, part of making your country strong is to somehow negotiate. You got to give, you got to take. And they're not willing to do that. And until that changes, I don't have a whole lot of faith in their whole system.
Negotiate.
Yeah, it's a different word. Four syllables. That's tough.
Can you spell that for me? I'd want to Google it and find out just exactly what. Before I can commit to this negotiation. That you've talked
I'll
about,
spell it for
I need details on it.
Okay. I am POSSIBLE. And that's the week that was, which, by the way, was a name we were throwing around at some point for the name of this. It's, of course, the gist of it. Don Landry. I'm Bill Hayes. The week that was became the name of the new Jay Onright show on TSN. And I don't want to say anything, but if you want to catch the show, be quick. It may not be around too much longer. We hope to be, say, next week.
And that's the gist of it for another week. The gist of it is available every Wednesday afternoon through iTunes or at donlandry.com.